ineluctable conclusion that's to be derived from many of these questions that I'm going to raise. So let's read the psukim and let's see exactly where the problematica lies, and then subsequently we'll try to resolve this with one yisod. So I'm reading psukim starting perek yizayin pasuk aleph, and these chumashim, the red chumashim, it's found on page 168, perek yizayin pasuk aleph pashut b'shalach. I just want to mention by way of hakdama that this falls upon the heels of a rather extensive and elaborate discussion of the Parshas Hamon that precedes this, but I'm not going to focus on that now, but rather on Perek Yitzayim. Vayisu kol adas v'nei Yisrael nibid basin l'maseyem al pi Hashem. The Torah describes how the entire assemblage of Klal Yisrael journeyed al pi Hashem. This language, by the way, of al pi Hashem, as you probably are aware, is a very significant description of how Klal Yisrael is supposed to travel, and where you really see this in greater length are Psukim in Bamidbar. If you have a Chumash, just for a moment, I'll refer you to the Psukim in Parshat Va'aleisla. Parshat Va'aleisla, that's an Yisrael Mashim, page 360, or more precisely, in Parak Test, Pasuk Test Vav, the Torah has a very lengthy, I would say, incredibly prolix narrative describing the journeyings of Klal Yisrael. This, of course, is in reference to the Mishkan. When Moshe Rabbeinu would erect the Mishkan, dismantle it in the course of our sojourn. So we have Sukkim there. Take a look in starting from Test Vav. With Yom Hakim and Samishkan, the Torah describes Kisahanan and Samishkan Yom HaEdos. The Anan, the cloud, covered the Mishkan. Uvayav Yal Mishkan to Marei Shaboker. Ken Yatamid Anan Yichasenu. The Anan by day, Umarei Shloila, a pillar of fire at night. And the Torah describes what the criteria for traveling was. Ulufi Heyolos the Anan Yala Oel Beachay Chen Yisub and Yisrael. When the Anan would ascend, Klal Yisrael would travel. When the Anan would descend, would hover over the Mishkan, Shem Yachal Bnei Yisrael. But the Pesukim I'm referring to, specifically, start on Yudches, Al Pi Hashem Yisrael Bnei Yisrael, the Al Pi Hashem Yachal. The entire encampment and the entire traveling, the entire procedure was founded and predicated upon Al Pi Hashem. And then the Torah continues, and this, these Pesukim require a lot of explanation why the Torah feels the need to be so marich. The pasuk tests of harich anan la mishkan, that the anan remained there. Obviously, we didn't travel. And then pasuk chav v'yesha sheyeh anan yam mispar la mishkan. Sometimes it was a very of short duration, but everything was with one criteria. What was that? Al pi Hashem yachanu, al pi Hashem yisov. And continuing v'yesha sheyeh anan ve'erav avokis. Sometimes it was only a short 12-hour period. So what happened? Of course, once the anan ascended, we traveled. Sometimes 2 days, sometimes a month, sometimes longer. Of course, we didn't travel. I mean, I think by now we generally got the point. Why did the Torah feel the need to re-elaborate and constantly all the different scenarios, all the different circumstances, and it ends up by saying again, okay, I'm only showing this to you right now just to make you aware of the problem, which the Ramban and other Rishonim deal with, but back over here in our Chumashim, in our text, in B'Shalach, the Torah says very clearly, Al Pi Hashem, they are traveling Al Pi Hashem. We have a problem that there was no water. So right away, something should trouble you. For those who have a chush for the Hebrew language, which all of you have, I would like to translate this pasuk, not the beginning of the pasuk, but the middle of the pasuk. They encamped in the Fidim, one of the encampments. I'm now translating. There was no water to drink the people. I think that's a literal translation. Of course, you understand very well. What does the Torah mean? The Torah means Vein Mayim Lom Lishtos. That's the way it should have been written. It should have been articulated in such a fashion. Vein Mayim Lom Lishtos. Or, if you want to use the construct state, the smichus, Vein Mayim Lishtiasom. There was no water that the people would be able to drink and satisfy themselves, but the language that the Torah uses Well, the nature of the expression that's used here is, I would say, nothing short of being outlandish and rather cumbersome. There was no water to drink the people. I just want to stress it so you have the item right in front of you. I continue. Vayorev ha'omni Moshe, the people begin to quarrel with Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayomru tenu lanu mayim v'nishta. They tell Moshe Rabbeinu, give us water so we can drink. Vayom lahem Moshe, Moshe responds, matarivu nimadi, why do you contend with me? Matanasu nes Hashem, why are you testing Hashem? Here again, there are several difficulties that automatically come to the fore. Number one, if the people are engaged in a personal conflict with Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayorev ha'omni Moshe, what does the text say? Tenu lanu mayim v'nishta. Namely, they address Moshe Rabbeinu in the plural form. Tenu, you, Lashon Rabbi, give us water. Whom are they talking to? They're speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. Furthermore, we're astounded at the reaction of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu should have responded. Namely, if there's a personal conflict, he should have responded to this personal conflict that they had with him. Instead, Moshe Rabbeinu, what does he do? Moshe somehow extrapolates from their remarks that the people are not just contending with him, but what else are they doing? They're testing Hashem. And the question again arises, where did Moshe come to such a startling conclusion when the Torah is simply reporting a personal quarrel with Moshe Rabbeinu? Vayorev ha'om Moshe. Vayomru tenu lanu mayim v'nishta. Vayomru lahem Moshe, mati ruvu nimadi, why are you contending with me? Matanasu nes Hashem, why are you testing Hashem? Where in heaven's name do you have any hide or hair reference to a nisayon neged Hashem?
Tenu.
Okay, you already have the answer. But this is, if you don't mind, first I pose the questions before I come to the, shall we say, to the responses. Baruch Hashem, Binyamin, Shlita. The Torah continues. Vayitzma shama'am lamayim. The people are thirsting for water. Vayolen ha'am ha'moshe. And they're complaining against Moshe Rabbeinu. And they say to him, Vayomer, Lama zeh li sanu mimitzrayim. This, of course, is a refrain we're going to hear again and again throughout the Torah. Why did you take us out of Egypt? Lahom bis osi v'yes banai v'yes miknai batzama. And Moshe Rabbeinu, at this point, cries out to Hashem in Pasuk Dalit, Vayitzak Moshe al Hashem leimor, Mo ese lo mazeh, what am I going to do for these people? Od meyat uskaluni. They're going to stone me. What kind of reaction is this on the part of Moshe Rabbeinu? Does one have a sense? The people want agua. H2O, Vasa. The other languages that I know. How did Moshe Rabbeinu react in such a fashion? Oh, now the Skaluni, almost as if Moshe Rabbeinu has gone into hysteria. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu become so hysterical? Give them some
water.
Spring Mountain, what is it called?
Poland
spring water. And the matter will be resolved. One, two, three, what's the problem? Vayitzma, the Torah describes people are thirsting for water. And the stress is, in Pasuk Gimel, Loham yisol si v'yazbana v'yazbikna batzama. The Pasuk says that, Hoi, the Marantinus, Kol tzomei, l'chul amayim, person who's thirsty, what should he do? He should obviously install a okay, or some Poland spring. Isn't there another one? I forgot the other one.
Deer Park.
That's what it is. I've had both. Anyway, and instead, Moshe Rabbeinu reacts in a fashion that seems to be me'al me'iver.
Which one tastes better?
I don't recall. I'll be honest with you. I was on a plane not long ago, a few months ago, Baruch Hashem. And apparently the stewardess must have been in a very good mood. So she said to me, it was a Continental Airlines, she said, sir, and she asked me what I'd like to have. coffee, tea, or vitality? So I said, vitality. He said, I was just joking. Anyway, I was going to start off with that, but I decided not to. Because I'm very straight, as always. Anyway, Moshe Rabbeinu here seems to be acting in a fashion that is beyond belief. Oh, me, I'll just call me. Vayom Hashem Moshe, Avor Lefeom, Likach Yitcha Mizikne Yisrael, Umatcha Sheikisa Boaz Hayor, Kach Biot Chavar Lofta. Moshe Rabbeinu is told to do something incredibly dramatic. Namely, go in front of the people, take the Zikna Yisrael, the members of Sanhedrin, take the staff, which you went ahead and carried out the Makos, the Halachta. Hinini Omei Lefonecha Shom Anatsur B'Chorei. I'm going to stand before you by the rock in Chorei, Har Sinai. What in heaven's name is going on here? Give them some Poland spring water, v'nigmar Isaac. Instead, Moshe Rabbeinu decides to go and make a movie out of it. Actually, Hashem did. Take your staff, go to Har Sinai, be kisa batzur, be yotzu v'men amayim, b'shasa'om, v'yaz kein Moshe le'ein ezikne yisrael. Prima facie, at first glance, we are astounded at the response of Moshe Rabbeinu. We would have expected Moshe Rabbeinu should immediately have dented the complaint and placated the nation simply by offering them water to satiate their thirst. That would have been the simple, unadulterated response to this bakosha on their part. Instead, Moshe, despondent and perhaps even hapless, sees that there's a hopeless situation, throws up his hands, heavenly words, cries out to Hashem, a bit more, they're going to stone me. Pilei ploi. Unbelievable. Not only are we taken aback by the reaction of Moshe Rabbeinu, but even more stunned by the response of Hashem Yisbarach, who directs Moshe Rabbeinu to engage in a public, dramatic act with the Zikna Yisrael, a divine directive to appear at Har Sinai with his staff to hit the rock, in order that the water should gush forth and somehow quench the thirst of the people. What is the nature of this public display? And especially, why this geographic locus? Why Har Sinai? Why does that become, shall we say, the epicenter of this entire event? Not only that, as I said, how does Moshe Rabbeinu do what he does? At the end of Pasuk, hey, Vayas, Kein Moshe, Le'enei Zikne Yisrael. Why the necessity for such a public event? Well, one more question let me just raise. I have actually many more questions. I'm only asking a few of them. Vayikroshim ha-mokom Masa Meriva. The Torah says the place is called Masa Meriva. You undoubtedly remember every Friday night, L'chun Ramana. Anyone recall what I'm referring to? Arboim Shana Akut Bedor. V'omar am toile v'avein v'em lo yodu d'rochay Hashem nishvati v'yapi v'yavon lanu v'chasi. Is that what I'm referring to? No. Should I have a sitter, please? Undoubtedly you're in the right area, that's for sure. But if you have a sitter here, thank you. So if you remember, which undoubtedly you do, we are, shall we say, the sheep of Hashem Yisbarach. Hayom Yimikolo Sishmo. By the way, that's a favorite analogy that we see throughout Tanakh, that Hashem is the shepherd and we are his sheep, or if you will, the Manhigi Yisrael are the shepherds and we are his sheep. This is seen, just to give you two examples, if you remember Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Pinchas, when he's looking for a successor. So the Torah says, "Lotia adas Hashem katzon, Hashem lahem roveh." That the flock of Klal Yisrael should not be like sheep without a shepherd. Or for that matter, there's a whole parak in the Cheskel that's devoted to this mashal. But anyway, the Torah, the pasuk continues in Tehillim. Hayom in mikolos ishmo. Al takshu lebachem ki meriva ki yom masa bamidbar. Notice the language of the pasuk. Do not harden your hearts. Ki meriva. What are we referring to? This incident mentioned in Bashalach. What word is found first? Meriva, because that's what the Torah described here. Vayorev ha'am yemoshe. There was a struggle with Moshe Rabbeinu, some sort of a personal rib. And then the David HaMelech says here, ki yom masa bamidbar. No, apparently there was also some sort of masa, correct? Some sort of test. Asher nisun yavosechem b'chanun igam rufoli. But I'm asking over here, thank you, that notice that when the Torah sums up this event, vayikosher hamokom masa b'riva, what does the Torah do? It reverses the order. The order, lefi haseder, is first vayorev ha'om yemoshe. There was a rib, and not only that, but Moshe Rabbeinu himself says, "Mati ribu nimadi, first meriva, then matanasu nas Hashem, then masa in pasuk beis." And yet, at the end, the Torah says that the matter is reversed. The sequence somehow is reversed. Namely, even though the proper chronological order of events is, as I mentioned to you, first the meriva and then masa, but here the Torah says, "Vayikra she'amaka masa meriva." Why? Al rib bnei Yisrael. Sensed there was an element of testing Hashem that lurked behind the so-called personal quarrel they seem to have with Moshe Rabbeinu. But certainly the correct order should have been first what? Meriba and then Masa. Not only that, if you remember in Sefer Dvarim, those of you who have a Chumash, so in Sefer Dvarim we actually have a reference to this event as well. But the Torah actually, in Sefer Dvarim, tells us that we should not test Hashem. Lo tenasu es Hashem alokechem, kasher nisisem b'maso. Do you have a chumash here? As you know, Sefer Dvarim, generally speaking, reviews, Mishnah Torah reviews the events that occurred earlier. And here the Torah, besides mentioning the Chen HaMeraglim and all the other Chattayim essentially that we underwent, also refers to this particular event, namely the event of Masa Meriva. But what's striking over here, it's in Vayeschanan and Shesul, I hope it's still there, yes it is, Perek Vav, Pasuk Tezayin, page 450. Lo tenasu es Hashem Elokechem kasher nisisem b'masa. Of course, what is striking over here? The Torah does not even mention what? Meriva. That was the entire event. The Torah says, no. Don't test Hashem the way you are menasehim b'masa. Rashi had the spot comments. Shiyatsu b'mitzrayim, shenisu b'mayim, shenema, hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu. So somehow, that which began as a Meriva, Moshe Rabbeinu interprets it as a masa, and the Torah in Dvarim, when the Torah summarizes the event, the Torah describes it purely as Masa, completely and totally discounting, or if you will, completely disregarding. There's not even an oblique reference to any quarrel of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was not even involved. Billy Floyd. Yes.
Were there other people around in the desert? Because they had lots of gold. Couldn't they get some water? You could buy water with gold.
Who lives in the Sahara Desert?
In the young?
Okay, I'm not going to address that question. I don't feel qualified.
It kind of solves all the issues a little bit. So that's the reason why they're testing Hashem. They're kind of in the whole inference here saying, you gave us gold, but you can't give us water anymore.
My sense is that essentially, they were totally isolated, and they were in an area that clearly, Kandirev was totally not only desert-like, because the pasuk says "Mimidbar Sin l'maseyem," and the sense is that literally there's no water to be found to be had. It's the sense that I have, and that's how I would respond to that. And I think it's correct, especially the way the Torah introduces this pasha, Perek Yizayin Pasuk Aleph. But I believe that, in order to answer this question properly, I just want to go back to something else, and that is, I want to discuss one of the salient qualities of a Jewish leader. Any Jewish leader, any mandig, has to be sensitive and has to be, shall we say, has to have the ability to examine different phenomena that occur when he is, shall we say, the Malach Yisrael, and to interpret it properly. Any error sometimes, often manhigim interpret events incorrectly, and as a result it can lead to tragic consequences, or to a distorted interpretation that could only aggravate the problematica. I can give you many, many examples, there's no shortage of them, for those of us who live in the Middle East. I can give you literally tons and tons of examples. I don't want to really go into politics right now, I'm trying to avoid it, although it came out of Bashir. You know, every morning I listen to the news. And every morning I hear about our, shall we say, good friends in Syria. And they, every morning they announce how many people were killed yesterday. That's what goes on here in the news every single day. And on Shabbos, it was a bit more than usual. Usually they kill between 30 and 50 a day, 30 and 60 a day. On Shabbos it was 250. They somehow went on a rampage, decided to take massive weaponry and just go ahead and direct it to their citizenry. And essentially, what is the world doing regarding this matter? The Arab League is very upset. I don't know, are you aware you're living in the Middle East? Perhaps you're not aware. You know, there's a country called Syria, not far from here, and a few other countries around us. I should bring Rafi, actually, over here, too. Otherwise, people will not be apprised of what's what. But anyway, the Kitzun Yamansi was just here not long ago. You know Rafi? My Rebbe. Anyway, I have a lot of Rebbe in this family. So the... And every single day, people are being killed, left and right. And how does Assad, the president, prime minister of Syria, Bashar Assad, one of the Dolei HaTzadikim Shel Doreinu, how does he interpret these events? He interprets it as a small, dissident group of people who clearly have to be, shall we say, mowed down. Because there's no basis for their complaint. Everyone in Syria is absolutely delirious with joy at the government that they have. And that was in a state of, I would say, even almost similar to what Lahavdil. Nectar and ambrosia. What the gods had, they had there. Everything. It's almost Eretz Zavas Cholavut Vash. What could possibly be the problem? Except you have a few, shall we say, dissident types, a few unruly, rebellious, terrorist types, and they have to be eliminated. Because otherwise everyone else is the Simcha, the Sasson. It's just amazing how... And he actually believes that, no question about it. The Arab League is getting upset because there have been thousands of people who've been killed in the last number of months. You notice, by the way, that here again, don't take it the wrong way. I'm not a chassid gadol of the president of the United States, that's the understatement of the year. I didn't vote for him the first time, nor will I vote for him the second time, and I do vote in the American presidential elections.
Change will come.
I'm sorry?
Change will come, you said.
I know that. If you recall the first time, what was his motto?
The bank count.
What? No, what was the exact motto?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. You repeat something enough times, and the American people, gullible as they are, swallowed it hook, line, and sinker, including many, many Jews, unfortunately. And I saw right away, not that I'm a novi, but I saw the man is literally, he has one thing going for him, charisma. That's what I saw. I'm not joking. It was just unbelievable. In oratorical skills, no question about it. Ain't suffering that the man is really blessed, no doubt. But there's no content whatsoever, literally. Many, many years ago, I don't want to go into American history now because I have no time for it, but a leader has to know how to interpret events properly and how to react to them, how to respond to them in a mature kind of fashion. And leadership among the Jewish people is the confluence of, shall we say, not only the spiritual and personal traits of the leader, but it requires someone who has a fair amount of experience. I'm not here now to discuss my, shall we say, my eye of the storm experiences in Beit Shemesh, since I live a block away. This is for Mr. Strauss. But I'm not going to do that right now. I will spare you, because that would take 150 hours. But whatever the case is, there also there's a lack of leadership. No question about it. Let's be fair. Mishnah stuff. That's just the objective and be fair about it. But whatever the case is, certainly in Klal Yisrael, one of the elements of leadership comes about as a result of someone who has, shall we say, just like B'nai Nevi'im, trained to become a Navi. You don't become a leader overnight without, shall we say, Shimush. We see that all over Tanakh. The best example, of course, is Yeshua ben Nun, who becomes the leader, the successor to Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal said in Gemara Rafis, Gedolah Shimusha Shoteri Yesu ben Lemuda, he was Meshamed Moshe Rabbeinu. The Rav Zechen Nebracha. That's Rav Soloveitchik, for those who are not aware. So the Rav used to mention many, many times that the In Medrash, it mentions that there were people who were greater scholars than Yoshua ben Nun, Elazar and Pinchas, Hayu Yosef Mimulachim. Mimulachim, what a word. But they were greater scholars in terms of their intellectual acuity. And yet, who was chosen to be the successor to Moshe Rabbeinu? Yoshua ben Nun. Why? Because Yoshua ben Nun, the pasuk says, Lo Yomish B'Tech Oil. He was Mishamish Moshe Rabbeinu, and more or less he had many, many years of Shemesh experience, and as a result, he knew how to respond, how to act in different situations in accordance with Moshe Rabbeinu's directive and the like. So this is Ramban in Parshas Kisisa. Maybe I should show it to you. You have the Chumash again. You look in Kisisa, there's a Ramban there who quotes a Medrash. The Medrash comments that Moshe Rabbeinu Yeshua ben Nun came down from the mount. Now he refers to the mountain. The mountain is to have a Rebbe, Rabbi Relev, to the Bracha. So he would say, in Yiddish, of course, when they came down from Mount Sinai, and then he would say right away, I don't mean the hospital, Mount Sinai Hospital. He would say something else. I don't know if I should. Could you put that off 1 second? You see, some. It was a very sharp Rosh Hashiva in YU. Talmud Briscoe. So you have a kisisa of the following. Moshe and Aaron come down, and something very striking takes place. The Torah describes it here, but two totally different reactions. If you remember, on page 214, Paragraph of Base, the Torah says that they come down, Pasuk Yitzayim, Vayishma Yoshua's call up the Reo, this is of course the ego scene. Yoshua hears the voice of the people, Vayomer and Moshe, how did he interpret what was happening? Called the Chama Machadeh. There's a war going on. Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, ain't call on those Gevura, ain't call on those Chadusha. What do I hear? Something else. Call on those, Anochi Shomea. Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Yitzayim Yitzes, page 214 in the Retzal Moshim. Kol Anos Anochi Shomea. What does that mean? Says Rashi, based on the Targum. Moshe Rabbeinu heard Chirufim VeKidufim Klapei Mala. What did he hear? People were literally in some sort of a orgiastic kind of frenzy. Chirufim VeKidufim, imprecations being hurled, curses and what have you. A very, shall we say, a rather extraordinary kind of partying that was taking place. Not Nochama. So the question of Rabban is, how does Moshe react one way, Yeshua react another way? They both come from the same vantage point. And he breaks the Luchos. Yes, the Ramban, how did Moshe Rabbeinu know that which Yeshua didn't know? Answers the Ramban. The Lashon of the Ramban is absolutely striking. The Ramban writes, "Aval atam ki Moshe av bechokmahu umakir b'diguni akolos." Moshe recognized the nigga. He could distinguish between rap and Reggie and rock. Moshe had this unbelievable yichidus to be mafkin between cacophony and, shall we say, classical music. Anyway, that was just an editorial comment. But the Ramban says, Moshe is av b'chokhma. What I hear today is pure cacophony. Pure cacophony. Whether it's at chasanas or whether it's all the time, whatever people listen to all day and all night, as opposed to the Fifth Symphony. Oh, such longness. Tzveidinim. More than Tzveidinim. Dialectic. Anyway. Moshe av b'chokhma. They don't have a clue what I'm talking about. You know why? They're pushing so tone deaf from that cacophony, they don't have a hasoga. What new music is on? Never. That's what we're Moshe Abba Chachma, Umaki Benigun Yakeres. Moshe knew the nigga. The cacophony of Agoda. And he got some Medish. I better get moving. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yoshua, "Mi sha'asi dino Yisrael Yisrael in the market min kol l'kol, you're going to be the leader of Tal Yisrael, and you don't distinguish between one kol and another." Means at this point, obviously Yoshua was clearly, as Rashi quotes, at one point tyron, or as we say in English, a tyrant, not a tyrant, a tyron, T Y R O N, meaning a novice. Moshe Rabbeinu was essentially, he was the leader, the experienced manig. What was Yoshua? An initiate. He was someone, shall we say, who was about, in the process of becoming mechunach, to be a leader. But he was yet apparently roy to be a leader of Klal Yisrael. That's what the Medrash says. There's a pasuk in Yeshayahu, I think it's a Perek Yud Aleph, where the Navi says, V'haricho b'yiras Hashem. What does that mean? V'haricho b'yiras Hashem? A person should have a shmek. What does it mean? V'haricho, lashon reyach. Yiras Hashem. That's how Yiras Hashem should be so much a part and parcel of my persona, my personality, my entire warp and woof. Woof, woof. Should be so much a part of my personality, correct, that I should literally be able to schmeck it, to scent it. S-C-E-N-E-N-T. Daniel? I have two functions here at this yeshiva. One is to give brachas. That's what I do all day. Coming out more. And two is to teach English. Those are my two functions. Anyway, so therefore, now let's go back to the parsha that we're reading. In the light of this, see why Moshe Rabbeinu, the godless of Moshe Rabbeinu, how he was able to somehow schmeck out, if I can use that term, scent, and almost sense with his incredibly keen olfactory senses. Moshe Rabbeinu had the ability to see exactly what was going on. And I want to read the Pesukim again, starting from the beginning, and already Binyamin already gave out the secret, Baruch Hashem, because Binyamin is also quite acute. I'm sorry?
He's a
Megala Sey. Megala Sey, Baruch Hashem. Alabai, you should continue to be heard. Echwachel Megala Sey, the Sey is Hatela. This one bracha. Sey Hashem Li Reya. That's the problem on Purim. Nichnas Yayin on Purim. What comes out? So what kind of soul comes out, unfortunately? I don't want to tell you. The soul of people expectorating. That is to say, expectorating. Sorry. As opposed to, shall we say, emerging with beautiful mellifluity of Divrei Torah. So that depends if you have a lot of Yerush Shavayim in you. That soul will come out if you have, shall we say, you know it's going to come out. Vipers! Okay, I'm back over here. I'm starting from the beginning. Correct? So that expression bothered me the moment I saw this parsha many, many years ago. So I came to the following maskava. Because the Torah expresses itself the way it does, ve'ein mayim lishtay sa'am, as opposed to saying ve'ein mayim lo'am lishtay, or ve'ein mayim lishtiyah sa'am, which would have been seemingly more correct, al pidikdok, the answer is, and I found the medrash that says it explicitly, they had plenty of water. That was not the problem. Water, Baruch Hashem, abounded. There was no shortage of water. But shall we say, they were not satisfied with this quality. They wanted Polish spring water. Deer Park water. They wanted the real McCoy. Where's the beef? That's way many years ago. I'm really dating myself. What can I do? Papagayo. Papagayo, here we come! Baruch Hashem! It's what I say, but they don't let me be Papagayo. And the whole shani yechel, yeser! Achim agaso! Yeser hidu mitzvah. So now they search for some pretext to quarrel with Moshe Rabbeinu. They found an issue. Namely, the quality of water was not too good. What kind of food do you serve in this yeshiva? Anyway, I don't have time to tell all these other stories. Moshe, with his sharp antenna, immediately recognized the telltale signs of a rebellion against Hashem. And those, apparently, the rebellion against Hashem was under a mask or a front. What was the front? The demand for water. But that was not the issue. And that's why, till this point, the Torah utilized the plural form. Tinu lanu mayim benishteh, as Binyamin Siegel Shalita, my Rebbe, said so beautifully. And it was basically already they hinted, in this language, they were not directing themselves against Moshe Rabbeinu, but rather there was clearly something else involved here, namely, a rebellion against whom? Against Hashem Yisbarach. And that's the language of Tinu. The main thrust of this complaint was not directed against Moshe Rabbeinu, but against Hashem Yisbarach. The moment they saw the reaction of Moshe, what happened? They all unanimously joined the fray. Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Matarivu nimodi, matanasanes Hashem." And then the Torah says, "Vayitzma shom ha'om lamayim, vayolin ha'om amoshe." You know, sometimes when people, shall we say, I don't want to compare it to what happened over here in Eretz Yisrael recently. I think that's something similar in the United States. what they call Michat Olim. People started setting up tents the whole summer. We were surrounded by tents everywhere I went. I told my wife. My wife said to me, "Why don't we just camp out in one of these tents?" I said, "No, that's not exactly the idea." The idea was that people were complaining about the price of cheese. People stopped. Cottage cheese. That's how it began. Cottage. It began with the cottage cheese rebellion. And from there we proceeded to many other. It was very fascinating because actually the mice at the end of the day it was good. They reduced the price. I happen to like cottage cheese very much. And they reduced the price of cottage cheese considerably. And they discovered it was a racket. A racket between all the companies, the usual cartels and what have you, which is nothing new, shall we say, as the Pasuk says, V'hakesef yadne es hakol. Baruch Hashem. That's the cloud God love you in. Anyway, thank you. So when people start protesting, and then we start, after a protest, a rebellion, and then people start screaming and going into a frenzy, and then thousands of people come together, and before you know it, it's unbelievable what you have. You have literally almost a riot on your hand. And Moshe Rabbeinu right away sensed that, and by Yonanam HaMoshe, Lamazah has some Mitzrayim, and they become also very dramatic. Lahamis Osi, V'es Bonai, V'es Miknai, you just want to kill us all! That's all your interest is. And right away, Moshe Rabbeinu realizes, I have no control of this, shall we say, unruly crowd. By Yitzhak Moshe Hashem Le'imah, Moshe Salam Azeh, Od Magnus Komun. Hashem tells Moshe that in order to respond to this situation, what is Moshe Rabbeinu going to be compelled to do? He's going to be compelled to do something incredibly dramatic. And terribly traumatic means literally go to Choreh, to Har Sinai, take the mateh, he performed the osos. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu does in order to quell somehow this, shall we say, incredible, what would have been a querulous complaint that turned into something way beyond what it really was. And Hashem Yisbar told him to Hikisu Batsur, V'yatsu Yimene Mayim B'Shasa'am, V'yatsu Kei Moshe Eire Zikne Yisrael. And that's the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu calls the place Masa Meriva. Because what was the main issue? The main issue was Masa. Meriva, if you will, was only a front to, shall we say, get to the main dish, which of course was the Masa Neged Hashem. And that's what the Torah says, Al Rib Bnei Yisrael. Yes, there was a Rib. But primarily, it was Nasosim as Hashem Lemor Hayesh Hashem Mikibeinu Imayim. Let me just finish here one or two more things, and that's why in Dvarim, when the Torah reports or more or less re-articulates the whole concept, the Torah does not even mention the Meriva, because the Meriva was secondary, ancillary, tertiary, was not even a factor. It was only a front in order to get to the main issue. Now, there's nothing else here which I also want to draw your attention to. There's of course a word that describes Klal Yisrael here that's used again and again and again. Which word describes Klal Yisrael here? Which noun is used to describe Klal Yisrael?
Am,
thank you. Pasuk Aleph, Ei Mayim Lishtos Am. Pasuk Beis, Vayarev Ha'am Yimoshe. Continuing. Pasuk Gimel, Vayis Moshem Ha'am Lamayim. Continuing beyond that, the Torah says, Pasuk Vav, Vishasa Ha'am. Correct? The word Am appears many, many times. Here's a Ramban in this week's Parsha B'Shalach. The Ramban actually notes that this epithet generally in Tanakh has, shall we say, nether ramifications. I'll read the Lashon of the Ramban. Ramban points out that this, he brings many, many rayos kedarka b'kodesh from all over Tanakh, that this language of Am generally occurs, he writes, quoting a Chazal. Of course, the classic example, as you know, is where? In Parshas Baal Isra, Vayihi Ha'am Ki Misaninim Rabbi Yosnei Hashem. You remember that? By the Misaninim, the Ramban says, what we have in the Pinchas also at the end of Parshas the end of Balak, Pasuk says, Vayochel Ha'am Lizno Sabalei Smoya. Yeah, many times in Tanakh, Ramban writes, V'chol Mogam Shenemar Am L'shon Gnayu. So after I found all this, I didn't find all this. I found it, shall we say, in the sefer. You know the sefer I used? Mayim Amukim. You know that sefer? The sefer called Mayim Amukim, the deep waters. Tremendous sefer. It has it's the best sefer I've ever seen. Best sefer on Chumash. It's on Tanakh. It's on Shas. You know what that sefer is? Right here. It's called the Mayim Amukim. I like to read the psukim carefully. But then after I read psukim carefully and went through the deep waters, I decided maybe I need some assistance from some of the Gedolei Olam. And so I started looking around, and I found in the Sefer Haksava Kabbalah, the which is one of my favorite Svarim, Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, a Sefer that's not so well known, but he deals with texts. He's very, very carefully reads the texts. And he points out their problem was not a lack of water, there was water in abundance. And he more or less, not all the dukkim that I make does he have, but I believe that the same yisod really is also on top of. And this is a very fundamental yisod. I'll read you his lashon, the lashon of Sabah Kabbalah. Uladati, according to my humble opinion, the Torah actually, he derives it from the end of the parsha, where the name Masa Meriba, the order is reversed, the sequence is reversed. Lahoros, that they had shtia, they had water. Just, he says, Lahoyalem mayim b'shefa, b'chdei sheyuchal kol echa, lishtar z'b'chalei sheyirtze. You know, every person wants to have water, literally, my Polish spring water. The moment, shall we say, I wake up in the morning and every 2.5 minutes, etc. I remember many years ago that this actually was sent over to the Hespit for our Soloveitchis, in Bracha. In Boston, what do they call soda? Pop.
Why?
Okay, don't ask me why.
Why?
Chicago also they call it pop. Correct. I don't know why, maybe the only one will investigate it. Anyway, so once a Mashulov came to the Rav, our Soloveitchis in Boston, and the Rav kind of was by himself, which is very rare. The reason why they let the Rav by himself, you'll understand why in a moment. And they had left the Rav supper, rather, apparently he hadn't eaten the entire day, left at supper. Often the Rav used to fast, he fasted all kinds of tzaniyos all the time. There are only a few that we know about, the Yartzai here, the Yartzai there, but one of his gabayim told me that the Rav fasted every mitzvah and donoshlik. There was days that the Rav didn't eat. They asked the Rav, why don't you eat something? Aren't you hungry? I said, no, I'm not hungry, don't bother me, leave me alone, don't bother me. And so that's the gabayim told me, want to be shavashim. And then later on, they discovered many years later, anytime there was a tzar and klal yisrael, the Rav would fast. It was constantly yeshiv b'taniyos, it was unbelievable. We didn't even know about it. We knew about the yard size that was 7 or 8 a year. You learn Mishnayos the whole day from 9 in the morning till Shkia. I'm not exaggerating. You learn Mishnayos all day. I would go out and have a coffee and breakfast and lunch and supper and a bagel and vinocha palzachet. And the Rav sat there and learned and what have you. It was unbelievable. So once the Mishul came to the Rav in Boston, and after he started going to his house, and the Rav heard his service, and the Rav said to him, the Rav, by the way, was not incapable of doing the following. The guy would come, we saw in Shkia a number of times, whatever he had in his pocket, he gave to the Mishul. So once he pulled a $100 bill out of his pocket, I saw it myself. $100 bill. So one of the gabbayim tried to stop the Rav. The Rav literally thought, no. He probably could use $100. What is the problem? Anyway, so he gave him $100. Anyway, the Rav gave the guy his entire supper. Well, it was a supper he hadn't eaten the entire day. He gave him his whole supper. So then the guy said to the Rav, he says, can I have some soda? So the Rav says, soda? What is that? What is soda? What is soda? You know what the guy's talking about. The guy says, soda! Apparently, that's what I don't know how they know this story if only the Rav Mishulch was there. Well, I need some soda! He said, what is soda? What is soda? So he starts, he said, drinking, then tells the Rav, it's colored, you know, colored water. He says, oh, you mean pop! The Rav said, pop you want! Pop, he says! Pop, me drink not by a chasana. Only by a chasana do we drink pop. We ever heard of drinking pop during the week? And what do? Every 2.5 minutes we're drinking pop. And then of course we got in with some good Max's cake, Baruch Hashem. Down the pop. Papagayo. Baruch Hashem. Hashem. Anyway, so he says here, it's out of Kabbalah, that it's clear they had water, that was not the issue. In other words, the whole point is that sometimes we complain, and we are sometimes guilty of querulous complaints that really have no foundation whatsoever. And then we go into a frenzy. Many years ago, I learned in yeshiva. I won't say the name of the yeshiva now. Maybe it's a Shail Lashon Hara, Habak Lashon Hara, I don't know. And we used to have, we didn't have much to eat in the yeshiva. There was enough food for 50 to 100 guys. There were 400 guys in the yeshiva. And so you'll ask my brother, Shlita. My brother comes here on Sunday night. You ask him, my brother, whenever he came to lunch, there was no food left. Nothing.
Exactly. But the whole pot.
That's the same yeshiva with the chong pot. I can't tell them the story now. You'll tell them. If you remember the story, you'll tell your father.
Rabbi already told
him. Oh, Rabbi told him. So only 50 people had, and the rest had to. So we lived on bread and eshel. You know, eshel is this white kind of stuff, which I don't know how to describe. It's like Babylonian kusach, like yogurt that Gemara has. Anyway, b'kitzer, so good. And we lost a lot of weight, which is also a good thing. Baruch Hashem, not a bad thing. So at one point, there were guys in yeshiva who said they had enough. We told the Hashiva we're going on strike. There was a strike in Slobodka many, many years ago. We're going on strike. And they all sat down outside the Beis Medrash. The Israelis in the Shul, about 200 Israelis, 50 Israelis thought that these Anglos are, shall we say, have a few screws loose, and they did. They had more than a few loose. I was one of them. Anyway, so I can't say that I didn't protest when they had the strike. I could understand why we're striking. We're here to learn. What are we striking for? Anyway, the Shiva saw what was happening, and he took us up to the Givah. And in the Givah, he opened up a whole bunch of refrigerators, and we got, each one of us got a steak dinner. A steak dinner. A steak. Papagayos! Big large!
We should do this.
It was the only steak dinner we had the whole year and a half I was there in the tree. Otherwise, we were served. Otherwise, we were served itriot. You know what the itriot are? Pasta Sunday, pasta Monday, pasta Tuesday, pasta Wednesday, pasta Thursday, pasta Friday. And on Shabbos, we had cholent. So we had cholent on Motzei Shabbos, Shabbat Malka, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon. That's the story with the cholent pot. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. By Tuesday, unfortunately, the problem was that there was not enough, shall we say, how shall we put it nicely, politely? Everything was overflowing. Whatever the case is, it was a terrible Did we complain every 10 minutes? No, we did not. We didn't complain. Because usually complaints always reflect, if you will, largely to a large extent, people, Baruch Hashem, can learn to be mistabi b'muah a little bit less. But eventually, ultimately, people have to, shall we say, learn to be sameach b'chelkam. Baruch Hashem, I come to Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah. That's my main interest, hopefully to grow, to become b'nei Torah, b'rei mushleimim, to understand what Hashem Yisbarach wants us to do in this world. Obviously, we have to eat, that's for sure. But when eating becomes the very, shall we say, centerpiece of my life, and everything revolves around that, my father Hashem taught me what it says in the Rambam and the Buchim, namely, that we eat to live. But some people live to eat. That's not a good hashkafa. That's not a good philosophy. And Shabbos, of course, is supposed to. Onik Shabbos is a very significant mitzvah. And I'm not saying that we should. I'm not looking to starve you, chas v'shalom, or shall we say, do anything of that sort. But one always has to take a look carefully to see whether the complaint is real, genuine, authentic, or just a mask, shall we say, for other kinds of things that are going on. That's exactly what this parsha is all about. It's unbelievable parsha, and the Torah has telegraphed it. If you read the text carefully, then you see that there was something going on here. And that's why the Rav Zechariah ben Baruch used to say, why is he able to come up? Once a young man in Shir said to Rav Soloveitchik, how are you able to come up with all these chidushim of yours? So the Rav said, because I not only read the lines, I read above the line, below the line, between the lines. And you know how to read between the lines. And then this fellow said, so how come I can't do that? I won't tell you what the Rav's answer to that was. But whatever the case is, we have to read between the lines when we read a piece of Chumash like this. And these are things that right away I should telegraph to you that there's a certain built-in problematica, and I find it to me, it's the most exciting mystery to try to discover, not just in a piece of Chumash and Tanakh and Gemara, the Zal Bazak, the same thing to me. It's a mysterious kind of, shall we say, puzzle that I have to figure out and put together. And here you see an example of this puzzle. For Shalom, by the way, there are many such puzzles. And this whole parsha would need a few hundred hours to really go through. But this is an example of what you should do when you read a piece of English.